Hi, everyone, and thanks for listening to the Strike and Ellicott Files, an unofficial podcast dedicated to all things Cormoran Strike, as written by Robert Galbraith. My name is Kenz, and today Lindsay and I will be joined by a very special guest, Sam, as we dive into part one of Troubled Blood. Fair warning, this is a reread of Troubled Blood for both us and our guests, so please be aware that there will be spoilers for this book as well as the other books in the series ahead. Without further ado, let's begin.
Sam, do you want to do like a say who you are and where you're from kind of thing?
Oh, God, the pressure.
Yeah, it's all on you. All eyes on you right now.
Okay, cool.
Go for it. So, make it good.
Okay. Hello. I'm Sam. I'm 26. I live in England. I guess a little bit about me. I'm a web designer. I do a little bit with the Strike Fans website. I've known Lindsay for, what, 3 or 4 months, something like that.
Yeah.
Kenz, this is our first time chatting. I've got an unhealthy obsession with Strike and coffee and dogs, not necessarily in that order. I guess that's pretty much me, really.
That works. That's good.
Well, I love all of those things, so I think we're going to get along great.
Should I tell you guys now that I don't drink coffee?
What?
I know. I didn't know that. Both of your faces.
Oh, my days. I don't think I could function without coffee anymore.
I don't like it. I'm sorry.
I just go for coffee when I was about 16, and I just started like my apprenticeship and my training, and I was like, oh yeah, this tastes quite nice. And then like started at one coffee, then two, then three, then four in like a day, and then it was like I couldn't feel human at like 7 o'clock in the morning. It was horrendous.
So where in England do you live?
So I live in Newbury, which is in Berkshire. So Berkshire is about an hour and a half train journey away from London, something like that. So like in relation, we're kind of like middle of the south of England.
Okay.
And Cornwall is about 4 hours to the west.
Nice. I am going to count on you to correct anything that I say that's wrong, pronounce wrong. Because you just said Berkshire, right?
Yeah.
That's what you said. So yeah. When I read it, to me, it looks like Berkshire. Yeah. Yes. So you're gonna have to help us out there, so we don't get all these emails like you said this wrong.
No, it's all good.
I know. I'm already gonna say things wrong.
I was gonna say to you guys, like, I'm gonna say might say some really weird things, like some like colloquialisms and stuff that you'll be like, what does that mean? So if you don't know anything like, that I'm saying,
American English translation. But I guess we should probably get started. I think we should start with since you know the book's been out for a few months now. I know Lindsay and I we caught those chapters of Troubled Blood that were released early in that preview. Sam, did you get to read those early or?
I didn't. I completely missed
that. That was just here, wasn't it?
Was it just in America?
I feel like it was, and which makes me wonder if it was meant to be released or.
Or if it was an accident.
If it was a wonderful accident.
Yeah, because like for some reason with the American Apple books, like the ebooks. If they came out with a preview of Troubled Blood, like a little bit before it was released. So it was like the first 7 chapters, the whole first part.
It was the best night ever
to read. Yeah, it was so cool. I didn't even realize that it was up there until one of our friends, Shelly, she had posted something online about it. And I was like, whoa, are you serious? And sure enough, I checked it and it was like all 7 chapters. And it was like, whoa, are you for real? And I just spent my entire evening just like demolishing that.
I was actually watching Strike with my husband that night. And then, Kent, I got your message that was just like, Lindsay, all in all, like all caps. I was like, oh God, what's happened? Something bad happened. And then you told me about it. And I told him, I was like, I can't watch this right now. I have to go. I have to go. Turn it off. Priorities. It's over. So
I remember when the first book first came on Amazon, like over here. And, you know, it was like 9 months before release or something like that. And I'm like, oh, it's 11 days after my birthday. So I pre-ordered it. And of course, my sister and stuff were looking over my shoulder. And they're like, why have you brought a book with no cover? And like, they just couldn't understand it. So I had to talk them through the entire thing. And yeah, like the hype was real for sure.
Let's launch into chapter one. There's a lot of good stuff going on in this one.
Oh yeah. This was a fun chapter.
Yeah. This is one of my favorites.
Yeah. We just like launched like straight into the story here. But let's start out with that epigraph, though, because I know Lindsay and I are huge fan of that because...
Look, I don't know much about the Fairy Queen. I'm not like an academic Spencer or expert. Anything over here. But yes, this was one of my favorites. It's probably up there. Kent, do you want to read it while I try and find my notes?
Yeah. So the epigraph for this one, and such was he of whom I have to tell the champion of true justice, Artegal.
The champion of true justice.
From book 5 of the Fairy Queen.
Makes my Hufflepuff heart happy.
Yes, because he's a Hufflepuff. People like to argue that he's a different house. Lindsay and I are firmly in the camp that Strike is
we could do a whole episode arguing about this.
Some people are like, he's a Gryffindor. We're both firmly in the Hufflepuff camp. You can make arguments for all of them. Different house. Yeah, really. You could make arguments for all of them, but I'm firmly in that.
I would have always put him more as a Gryffindor. I don't know why.
I'll send you all my arguments.
you guys have thought about that. Wow.
Oh, I've thought about it a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I won't go into all my arguments because
we could save a whole, another episode for just talking about justifying why Strike is a Hufflepuff, and here's why.
Shanker. Hold on, guys. I got to unscrew this thing because
he's going to do it. Yep. That door jam is about to go boing. So we've covered that, you know, Cormoran is our champion of true justice. But as far as things that we let's go over things that we loved about this chapter. One of my favorite things, just to I guess go into just loving Jo's descriptions of people, the way that she describes the differences between Dave Fulworth and Strike.
Yeah.
That little paragraph there talking about how, like, you know, Dave's kind of, you can really see it in your mind. Like when she's writing it, she's talking about how, you know, Dave is very slight. And then, you know, the exact quote is here, because I did have it pulled up, that Strike is a large man, well over 6 feet tall, with a slightly crooked nose, his dense dark hair curly, he bore no tattoos, and in spite of a perpetual shadow of the heavy beard, carried about him that well-pressed and fundamentally clean-cut air that suggested ex-police or ex-military. So that's very vivid. I just really, really like
you
that.
Just like all descriptions of Strike, let's be honest.
I do, but like this is like in the books before, she was much more like, you know, talking about how like he's the reflection looking back at him was not handsome, you know, and talking about how his hair looks like pubes and like
Ends is like, I disagree.
He's like, I just agree with all of that. So I liked that it was a little more complimentary and kind of really fleshed it out in a more complimentary sort of way.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think that's really changed in like probably the past 2 or 3 books. It's kind of gone, like you say, from like, you know, pube like hair and all that sort of stuff, which is a phrase I hate. And now it's just curly hair, and I'm like, oh, okay,
yeah,
you know,
thank God.
Theme a lot,
seriously,
exactly, yeah. And like the farting sofa, I don't think that's never gonna go away.
no. But yeah, that's part of that whole like turning Strike into a proper romantic lead, because like, you know, he kind of came from very rough around the edges start, and now he's kind of making that transformation.
I've also wondered if it's how Robin sees him, because at first she describes him as like not at all attractive, and then, you know, it changes.
Yeah.
It changes over time.
So yeah. I've wondered if that could be part of it too.
Definitely.
How about the things I did not like? Polworth.
Yeah. He kind of grated on me just a little bit.
You don't like him, really?
No.
There were, okay.
There are things I like about him.
There are definitely, like, he's definitely a very good friend, and I liked him a lot in Silkworm. There were just, like, some turns of phrase that I was like, like, if I was sitting there, I might.
I probably, the quote that strikes, what Strike says at the end about most women don't like him. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's because the way he talks about women and his wife, especially.
He's just like.
Yeah, is like the way he talks about, his wife. It's so derogatory, and like, obviously, we'll come to this probably in a little bit, but the way he talks about, why he chose to get married and all that sort of stuff. Right. It's like, that's not
Just imagine taking a new job and planning to move away and not telling your wife. Yeah. I mean,
no wonder she's threatening divorce.
Yeah. Later on, I did like him, but I had this really cool image of him in my head because I thought he was funny in The Silkworm. And, you know, I really love sharks. So the fact that he has been bitten by one was like, that's a cool guy right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was just disappointed initially in him. What did you guys think about finding out about Joan and why he was in Cornwall in the first place?
That was sad.
Yeah, that was really sad. I guess for me, that kind of hit home. I know I kind of related to that quite a lot. My mum died from cancer and stuff. So I related to that quite a lot in terms of, you know, like the whole caring side of it further into the book and stuff. So I relate to Strike quite a lot in that whole bit.
It was hard. The whole thing of it was hard. Yeah. I had like all of these ideas of why he would be there from when we got the synopsis, and that wasn't one of them.
No. I thought he would just be there as like, you know, like a holiday or something. Yeah, like that, because it's been five books and there's never been any hint of a holiday or anything, which is where I saw that going. But that was surprising, especially seeing as we haven't really heard about Joan and stuff up till this point, really.
I think it was a great way to introduce Leda, or more, I guess, emotions about Leda when talking about Joan, because they, I think, especially for Strike, go so hand in hand.
You have like your birth mother, and then the person who's really more functionally his actual mother.
Yeah,
which is kind of a funny. It's kind of a funny concept, though, too, because like, you know, we've already talked about that, like in Cuckoo, about like real family, adopted family. That kind of stuff. Right. So it's kind of an interesting.
It comes up later too with the. I'm so jumping ahead, but it's what I do best. The funeral, when he thinks about, you have people back in London. They might not be a family, but
that whole
My view on Strike and Leda's relationship and what he thought of her really changed in this book. Up until now, I've always thought it was like such a negative thing, and he didn't, you know, like her in that way. But actually, he, you know, to begin with, he saw Leda as more of a mum than Joan, and the way his sister saw it completely the other way. That, I don't know, not surprised me, but I didn't think my thoughts would turn that way. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. When we get to chapter four, I have lots of feelings on that.
Okay,
definitely. I'm jumping
ahead. I'll save them. Well, no, it's okay. That's it's what we do all the time. What about the fact that his relationship with Robin was brought up so early on? I was really surprised about
that.
Super excited.
I was hoping. Yeah, that since they were having their little get together, that was gonna come up. As I was reading it earlier, it was like, oh man, when is it gonna come up? I know he's gonna ask him about his love life like any second now. This is the purpose of this conversation, is to basically run over what's happened over the past like year or so. So
is this the first time that he's actually said out loud to someone that he's thought about it?
I
was so excited.
Like for me, that whole conversation just felt so real, because that's, you know, what typically guys do. You know, you're in the pub and stuff and you're catching up, that, you know, that sort of thing naturally comes up in conversation. And what did he say? Just let me look at my notes. You know, he said, you know, he actually admitted that I've thought about it, and up until now, with, you know, Lucy and everything, it's just been dismissed, or, you know, just put to
one side. And what a great excuse. Like, No, because of the business, it kind of puts everybody off, right? Oh, okay, that's fine. But he's a big liar.
One thing that I really liked about that conversation was this particular line, and just because it ends up getting repeated later.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, I know you do. I can't help but feel like this is going to repeat in the next book. But the bit where Polwarth says, Joni reckons you're going to end up with your business partner, that Robin girl.
Yeah. Oh, that's not what I thought you were going to say.
Don't see. There you go. So, yeah, that's for a very special part later. But yeah, the bit about how, you know, Joan reckons you're going to end up with your business partner, that you have to wonder, like, that had to have really stuck with him to remember that line very specifically almost a year later, because that phrase pops up later in the book.
Well, the one that I thought you were saying was like, I'm turning 40 now or never kind of thing.
But that too.
Yeah. Well, because it also repeats itself with Anna a little, well, we'll get to that later, but she also says, maybe it's that I'm turning 40. There's lots of emphasis on like turning 40 and this being the time to do things. It gives me hope for book six a lot.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Mm. And also that bit about, oh, you know, the older I get, the less I think I'm the marrying kind. I just want to say, Strike, you are very much husband material. And he needs to, he's like one of those people that's like, he can't commit. And he's like, he'll step into the role as like a one night stand fling sort of thing. Or he's like a full on wife guy. There's no in between. There's no like, no. He's either a fling or he's a full on wife guy. Like full on, like John Mulaney, that's my wife. Like the whole nine yards. He is that guy. He is going to be that guy.
I wish I could relate to that conversation. I really do.
Oh, it's just going to get worse, Sam. What do we think about the first like childhood flashback that we get here?
See, I always struggle with this. I can never imagine Strike as a child. I've really struggled with
that. He just came out a man.
Yeah. Just, you know, like, you know, unshaven and, you know, big long trench coat and stuff. That's just the way it always was. I don't know. I just
popped out a lady 6'3".
Oh, God.
It's like trying to imagine a young Dumbledore. Like, it's just, it's what?
But it was really sad for me because like I have a 5-year-old son, and thinking about leaving him, just even with family, just up and leaving for who knows how long. Like, I can't imagine doing that. I can't understand her. And it's so sad where it says like that he's not much of a crier, but like the lump in his throat. I'm like, oh, God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I have to wonder, like, how, just thinking about that from the perspective of somebody who studied psychology, is just, you know, being in and out of their lives like that, you know, basically staying around for as long as, you know, her newborn kids absolutely need her.
It didn't like, seem to like stay it was alive. Even that.
Like it was like the bare minimum amount of time. It seemed
it was like, here's a new baby. Go buy some formula. Bye.
Yeah.
I don't understand her.
But yet spending that little time with like your newborn kids really like affects your like attachment style, you know, cause if you're never around, you know, and you don't have like a proper caregiver and it's like that's bouncing back and forth like that, it's it can really affect your ability to form healthy adult relationships. So I hadn't actually thought about that before, but
all right.
One more thing that I have on here on my list was, because Robin has a thought that echoes this a few chapters later, is this bit about how married people like to force folks who are still single and or not married yet to get together with other people.
That was a great parallel.
Yeah, because Robin talks about that that later. So
there's a ton of great parallels with them.
Right. It's really cool how they end up inadvertently thinking about a lot of the same stuff without the other realizing it at all.
It goes with the whole being. Yeah. There you go.
I know it's part of the whole story, but something that really frustrates me about both of them is how they both think about each other and being with each other and stuff, but neither of them admit it, and it happens all the time. Like when it's like, oh, you know, Yeah, she was secretly happy to see him and stuff. And like in the next chapter when he's in the restaurant and, you know, he's obviously, you know, grumpy as anything because of everything that's happened before. But she's not just like, oh, you know, really happy to see you. And it's just like, oh.
Yeah, like, please just
They're just so cute. All right. Do we have any other chapter one thoughts or should we go on to chapter two?
I mean, something I thought, I really liked the way that she made Cornwall feel like Cornwall.
Oh, go ahead, because I know nothing about this.
Well, I used to live in Cornwall, so like the way she's used things like Emmett's and stuff like that. And we talked about Dave, you know, moving from like Bristol back to Cornwall and stuff. And then he's like, oh, you know, you're not from the big city anymore. And he's not talking about London, he's talking about Truro. And that's really accurate to what it's like down there. Everything's much like it's Cornwall and the rest of England. That's quite a popular thought process. And yeah, I just thought that was really cool. The way like she hooked into all that stuff was really neat.
That's cool to know that that is in fact actually accurate. But I think unless anybody else has any more chapter one thoughts,
we're good.
Yeah, that was it for me.
All right. So on to chapter two, and I'm going to go ahead and so just to quickly summarize this one, this is the one where Strike is thinking about Robin and Joan. He meets Anna and Kim, and we basically kind of lay the groundwork for the case. I really liked the epigraph for this one. This one was heart that is inly hurt is greatly eased with hope of a thing that may allay his smart.
Translation.
The translation. So I was kind of torn on the interpretation of this one. My first thought was that it was just Anna talking about Anna coming to Strike to talk about her mother. But the last bit about allay his smart kind of made me think otherwise. My rough translation goes, the hurt in his heart is greatly eased with hope of something that will diminish his pain. Basically, something
AKA Robin.
Yes. Or the case, I think you could really apply it to either one.
Basically, all right, I guess.
it could be both. I mean, because he's working on the case with Robin, it's all tied up together.
Well, no, it could definitely be both. Cause I mean, it says how he always wants to hear her voice when he's feeling down or bored or whatever. But also we get the whole thing about just a new mystery to solve.
Yeah, I loved it when he said, you know, oh, you know, we can work this one together.
Yeah.
That made me really happy. It's like, just yes! Like, that was a real big up, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, we get introductions to Lucy's other kids in this chapter.
Finally, some names, right? Everybody dying to know the other two's names. I'm glad that my son is Jack. I'm glad that I didn't name him Luke or anything.
Because
that kid
is awful.
He is.
Yeah, like, yeah, for real.
He's a little bully.
He's a little shit of a kid. Like, that seriously. Too. Like, who seriously runs off with somebody's leg? Who does that?
Like, if that was, you know, if that was me and my fake leg got stolen, then I'd be pretty
leg angry got as stolen. Well.
I just love also after that incident that there's like, there are a couple moments in this book where we get some real big like dad energy from Strike and like the quiet telling off that he gives Luke that leaves
which
him
he apparently
subdued.
Needs. Well, he needs that because it doesn't seem like anybody else is telling him not to steal people's legs. So.
Yeah, see, I could just imagine. God, could you imagine like Greg sitting him down and be like, now, Luke? No, he's not going to. I have a feeling that he like, I don't know. I've told you, Lindsay, I don't like Greg very much. I have my suspicions about Greg. But
he isn't that likable. So it's fair.
He's not.
Even though we don't know a ton about him, what I do know is not super likable.
Yeah, him and Strike have never got on in any of the others. It's always, you know, the agency has always been a bit of a
downstep. Yeah, I think I immediately didn't like him with his comment to Nick and Elsa in The Silkworm, where he immediately brings up like, oh, you don't have kids. And I'm like, why? Like, why do you do that? Why? Just PSA to everyone. Don't ask people why they don't have kids.
Kids, yeah.
Don't ask about kids. Just don't do it. It's so obnoxious.
Oh, this is the first, we get a little bit more of a glimpse into Joan and her tendency to kind of, you know, pressurize people into telling her what she wants to hear, like whenever, you know, Strike lost his leg and, you know, whenever he was living in the office.
That was interesting to me.
That they didn't know that things were so bad, or just the whole pressurizing.
Just her, just that weird kind of attitude. Doing that. Yeah, it's strange, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
gosh, it's interesting to see how that kind of rubbed off on Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and how that makes Strike feel.
Yeah,
well, because sides. It's essentially, it's just, you're not ever asking someone how they feel, so it's it can be like, well, either they don't care how I feel, or they don't want the truth of how I feel, so don't tell them, which kind of can maybe explain some of why he doesn't open up a lot, because he's not used to people asking him how he feels.
Yeah, it's people assuming, being like, oh, you know, you're fine, or you know, or you're hungry, or whatever, right. Rather than actually asking, it's you know, almost telling them what you think they should feel. Yeah. which isn't good.
I did really love him trying to find an excuse to text Robin. It's super cute, like a little teenager. If I tell her about, I like how his excuses to tell her about Morris needing to be paid for expenses, but really, like in London, Robin's just already handling it. She doesn't need him to tell her what to do.
Yeah, I like in the end when he actually didn't find that excuse. I think
the
next chapter, no. But he says, "Wait, like, no."
Yeah, I mean, everyone can relate to that, right? Like, what can I text this person about?
Yeah, like, I want to talk to this person, but I don't want to seem like I'm just, like, texting for whatever reason. Though, hopefully now, you know, they don't feel that.
They need to do that.
And just be like, hey, girl.
Hey, girl.
Could you imagine? That would be so funny.
That's why I'm still single, obviously.
So what did you guys think about meeting Anna and Kim?
I really liked Anna. I was a little suspicious of Kim, not that she had anything to do with, you know, Margot's disappearance, but the fact that she was so like, you're not talking to Anna without me here. I was just like,
I remember you saying that you were suspicious, but I kind of took it as how it was, which was like, she has been taken advantage of. So yeah, it was interesting. Once you said that, I was like, okay, now I'm going to keep that on my radar. But
yeah. I was the same. I really liked Anna.
Yeah.
I really struggled to like Kim. I struggled to like her for like the whole book. Like it's her being protective and stuff, which is understandable, but you know, it kind of bordered on obstructive sometimes, I felt. But you know, it was all good intentions, but
to like her.
Yeah, I really struggled.
I really liked Strike's reaction to hearing about that she went to a medium, because I had expected him to have this attitude about you know, just like when we got the synopsis about kind of what it was about, seeing all of the, what did we get before? Like the tarot cards. And I was like, oh, he's going to not like this at all. But what I liked about it the most was that it seemed to come from a place of, these people are being taken advantage of.
Yeah. It's not just
it's the
irritation.
Injustice of it. Yeah. It's the injustice of it that he doesn't like, which I like.
It ties into the whole Hufflepuff thing.
I mean, not to bring it up again, but he's a Hufflepuff.
There's one thing that I also liked about, one other thing that I liked in chapter two, which was, and this is also brought up multiple times in just the first part alone, is the, this is like right after Anna's given him her little spiel about her mother and everything, and the passage is, Strike often resented his incurable urge to know, his inability to leave an itch unscratched. He couldn't help it, he wanted to know more. And I wonder, almost, because that keeps getting repeated, if that's not only going to apply to how he approaches cases, but also how he approaches perhaps certain other areas of his
life.
You
mean like Robin?
I have seen. I saw one person who wrote a story that kind of took that idea and kind of ran with it. And I, ever since I read that, I was like, you know, I would not be surprised if that came up again in that sort of context in the book. So if it does come up later, I would be very pleased.
You're making a note right now?
Yeah, I'm making a note right now. I'm predicting it now.
Could also be Leda too.
It could
but
be.
Yeah, I think you're right, because he's going to get to the point where he has to know what could be.
Yeah, you could sit here and be miserable, or you could take action and you could see how it could pan out.
It's not obvious we're big shippers.
No, it's cool. I mean, I really like it when they have like their little moments, and then all those little moments build up into like these, you know, this one big thing, and you know, it gets so close,
and then Barclay walks in and ruins it.
This is the moment. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Chapter two doesn't have too much, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So chapter three sets us up with Robin for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like, isn't it so weird? Like, it felt like so good to see these people after a couple years.
Yes.
I mean, I know that sounds silly, but I was like, it's Robin. I missed you.
Right?
I really liked it because, you know, she was sat in a, mm-hmm. you know, in a bloody horrible Land Rover with, you know, her equivalent of junk food for hours waiting for something to happen. And that's exactly what Strike would have been doing three books ago.
Yes, and also, I mean, I know this is like the next chapter or so, but when it describes everything that she keeps with her, like IDs with different names on it and all the stuff that she has for surveillance, In Lethal White it said that about Strike having IDs with different names on it. So I was like, oh, they're like properly equal partners in this, which was cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really was to them, you know, to see her doing the sort of things that exactly what Strike would do. It's like, yeah, they are proper partners and everything. They're like, it's gone that step further. And to see her change so much as well as being.
And she wrapped up a case in this chapter too.
She killed a lot of cases in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like future prediction, that's going to be, I reckon that'll be a massive part of the next book.
Yeah.
See her have her own.
Yeah, she was great in this. The whole thing about like having multiple families, what a crazy. I really liked how she enjoyed telling her about Tufty, saying he's a polygamist, and it was like, oh, she like waited for his reaction. Yeah. That was good. Yeah.
And then it was silence, and then a little bit more, and then a little bit more. Yeah. And it was like, yes, this is my moment.
Poor girl was so tired the whole book.
I felt exhausted on her behalf while I was reading it, like, oh, poor thing.
I mean, I know that this is a different circumstance of what was happening with Joan, but I just want her to get some good sleep is what I need.
Seriously.
Book six goals, get some good sleep.
Yeah, book six is just going to be like in between cases. It's just going to be Robin napping.
Yeah. Robin, welcome to my world. It's rubbish. You'll love it.
So let's see. Another thing that since we were reintroduced to Robin in this chapter, we got to hear about how her divorce with Matthew is going.
Was anyone surprised by this?
No. Is anyone surprised that Matthew is a shit?
No.
No.
No. No. I hated him right from the word go. Yeah. And I'm not surprised at all about him dragging out the divorce.
It's just crazy.
In the way
like,
that
what
he
is
does.
His? What is again, his just... goal? Why? The whole time I'm like, why? Why do you do this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's like sitting here accusing her of basically being a gold digger. Like, really, really? Yeah, because she's been so focused on money the entire time.
I know, because it's like
they've been engaged and married.
The exact opposite point is always made with her staying at the job and everything. So for him to kind of take that and throw that in her face is so unfair. Mm-hmm. So, he's the worst.
Yeah, it really was.
Oh, speaking of other men who were the worst, we also got an introduction to Morris in this chapter. And can I just say two big middle fingers up to Morris because he sucks.
Yeah.
He does suck.
I was exactly the same with him. Like the minute he was explored in a bit more detail, and I think it was the way he flirts with Pat and stuff, and was like, yeah, you're a massive prick. I didn't know like to what extent that would then
I immediately knew that the synopsis where the unwanted attention from men, obviously I was like, okay, so that's this guy. And I think just all women know a Morris, we've all dealt with it. It's so, she writes it so well that it's like, we all know exactly what is happening, what's going to happen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He made my skin crawl. Mm-hmm. Immediately after he was described, I was like, oh, yep, I've definitely encountered a guy like this before.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, probably only second to Dennis Creed. He was my least favorite character in that whole book. But, I really, really struggle to like him at all.
Let's see. There's a couple of other interesting things in here. We get reintroduced to Ilsa in this chapter too, and her matchmaking attempts.
Ilsa is all of us.
Yes. Or Isla, as they like to say in the audiobook. But yeah, the Ilsa Isla thing.
One of our friends, I won't say her name just in case she doesn't want to, but she told us that she remembered an interview with J.K. Rowling where she said that she intended her name to be Isla, but that everyone kind of went with Ilsa, so that kind of happened. So I'm very curious if maybe they attempted to change it and then everyone's reaction was so strong that they changed it back.
Thing is, I could never see it as Ilsa. For me, it was either Isla or Ilsa. I couldn't see it as anything else. So why it was what it was, I never understood. Never got it.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It's Ilsa. Once they said it in the show, especially, if there was a time to fix it would have been then.
Yeah. If you wanted to switch it back, considering they, switched over a bunch of other names too, like Fancourt and...
Well, I think they explained why they did that, though. It's because if there's a real person and it's not super common, then they have to change it. I had always wondered that about Fancourt. Why did they change it from...
Andrew to Michael.
Andrew to Michael, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Kieran Calabas Jones.
In the first one, he had a double-barreled name. Yeah, they changed that in the series as well. I can't remember what to do, but I watched it and thinking, that's wrong.
Yeah.
And then
I'm glad that they explained that, though, because it was, I was just always really curious about that, why they changed certain things. But what about Robin's thoughts on Charlotte? Anybody have any thoughts there?
She is very clearly very hung up on Charlotte. And I like that the comparison of, because, Ilsa is using Charlotte as a way to kind of get Robin to talk about Strike.
Right.
That,
she wants to know.
She wants to know more, but she feels like she's gorged on a bunch of
junk
food.
I love that comparison there. It's so, everyone can identify with that.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like in the previous books, Charlotte was always this person who, she's heard little things about and she was drawing her own conclusions in her own head. Whereas now she knows a lot more of the backstory and it's this person who, it's kind of forced upon her in conversation. And
she also wants to know
herself
what
it.
His feelings are about her. And that's what she doesn't know. I think that's what she wants to know the most about.
And that's probably why she doesn't shut that down, because she wants to know enough to kind of put all the, pieces together. And if Strike's not going to talk to her about Charlotte, hint, hint,
she'll
please talk to her.
She'll talk to Ilsa about it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. The lack of communication. It's terrible, isn't it? And it's like she, she wants to. Wants to know more about Charlotte, but then again, all the time it's like feelings they preferred not to examine, as Strike puts it, and it just comes up all the time. And
gonna bring up this thing that they ignore. Yeah, I really wish that when Charlotte had asked when on the phone when she had said, "Is the boss there?" I really wish Robin would have said, "Speaking."
Mm-hmm. I think that after this book, she totally would.
Yeah.
That, like, now that she's really, like, coming to her own, she would definitely feel comfortable with, like, if somebody asked, you know, where the boss was, be like,
right here. Yeah. And just Charlotte, her whole tone, and I've got something he wants. I was like, oh, barf. Like, no.
Yeah. I like that that Robin does know about all of the, you know, the ultimatums and the, you know, the threats of, you know, leaving and, you know, her hurting herself and, like, all that other kind of stuff. The fact that she is, like, well aware of, like, this long laundry list of manipulations by Charlotte, I think really gives her a pretty good context. You know, that now that she doesn't just know, oh, she was with Strike for 16 years off and on, she has kind of a clearer picture of kind of how that went.
She just needs a more clear picture from his perspective.
Yeah,
not from a third party, ideally.
Let's see what one of the things that I made a note about was the curry nights that everyone kind of assumed would be a thing that are not a thing. It feels very realistic and in character that they would, I mean, obviously, that they would not do that because they don't want it brought up, you know, like they're both so aware that there's something between them, but that they don't even want to hang out together because they don't want other people to see it.
I've been in that position before where, like, you're with somebody that, like, everybody knows that there's, like, that kind of energy going on between you two, but you're not dating yet, but everybody wants you to start dating.
Yeah.
And it can be so uncomfortable if you've not talked to that person about how you felt yet.
They're both so private that I can see, like, and I'm very introverted and private in that way too. So it's like, I can see that it's just super uncomfortable for them to be put in that situation.
Especially where you know that that's what the intention is.
Yeah.
Like, they're not exactly subtle.
Yeah. It's when you don't know what to say. Yeah. It's when you don't know what to say as well. And when you're with, you know, other people, it's like, you know, if I say this, will that be interpreted the wrong way? Or, you know, will that be too much? Or too?
Don't say that. That person's right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super awkward.
I also am very curious about what in Robin thinking about Ilsa, it says that, like, some of their biggest fights, Nick and Ilsa, were about Charlotte. What do we think that they fought about Charlotte? That was kind of strange to me. I wonder what that would have been.
I feel like her go-to things as far as accusing people is like infidelity, maybe. If Nick was, like, a resident or working long hours or something like that, you know, if they're in the early stages of their relationship or they were having a rough patch or whatever.
That Charlotte would imply.
That one or both of them had been unfaithful, or that sounds like something she would do.
Yeah, I could also see just maybe them trying to get involved in their relationship, like Strike and Charlotte. Maybe I can see that maybe Ilsa would want to be more talking to him about, this isn't good, she doesn't love you, this isn't healthy, and Nick saying leave it alone. I can kind of see maybe that happening too, but I'm just super curious about that.
Yeah, I think friends are much better at seeing when you're in a relationship that obviously isn't healthy and isn't going to go anywhere, and realistically, you know, they're the people who are going to tell you, you're never going to see that for yourself. And I think that's what I think those, you know, those falling outs and stuff would have been about, because Charlotte is such, like, a controlling person. And I think it was in Lethal White when they're in the restaurant, when after Strike and that have been to the art gallery, and that conversation goes into a lot of detail about, you know, like, dissecting her personality and the sort of person that she is.
Awful.
And how she's so destructive with everything. So yeah. Yeah, to say the least. Yeah, you know, really kind of breaking that down. That's what I think.
She is awful. I personally, another bit that I really liked from this chapter was the the I know what you're thinking and I know you, the less you found out, the more interested you'd get thing.
I wish you could see my notes right now, clearly, because I wrote that exact same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like one of the things. It was like, oh man, they've gotten so much closer as friends. That's so cute.
Yeah, yeah. The whole I know that you're thinking this would be me taking advantage of her and her of Anna, you know, and mm-hmm. her saying, I'm not saying that you would. Yeah, it's
they just know each other so well, and it's nice to hear them actually like acknowledge their closeness, because they do that right. So rarely.
There was also just like the slight little check in my head about a PI taking advantage of people, and I was like, interesting.
Yep.
Not to name names or anything, but. Definitely. I just really I know that we've already talked about them texting back, but that whole banter was it was a fun way to be reintroduced to them talking. That was the first time we see them talk together, so that was I liked that. Mm-hmm. The text messages,
I did too. I liked it when she said I know you, you know, when they're talking about like why he wants to take it on something. I'm like, yes, you do.
Yeah. that was such a great contrast to everybody else in his life, right? When looking at like how Lucy talks at him saying this is how you feel but it's not, and then you see Robin come in with I know you and it's exactly spot on. It's because they actually do know each other, not just assuming. Mm-hmm. I really love the last line. As she turned the key in the ignition, Robin became conscious that her spirits had lifted considerably. Which, how many times, I wish I should go through the book. I should go through the book and just like how many times from talking to each other or seeing each other does it describe like that exact
their
thing.
Mood spirits, lifting.
Mood lifting, heart lightened. Yeah, it's constant, right? Mm-hmm. And then the jury watching them being Ilsa, Matthew, and Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and her trying to repress her smile. It's good. And the whole strike waiting for her at Journey's End. I thought I had to take a stop for a second. I was like, that's cute.
Mm-hmm. Cause like, yeah, that's that could, you could mean that in the mm-hmm. sense of them meeting up in, meeting up like later.
Right there. Or just in general, he's waiting for her at the end of her journey. It's super cute.
Mm-hmm. So,
all right.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is me being really nerdy about UK and stuff. I spotted an inconsistency. Strike says, you can pick me up from Falmouth. It's closer. Falmouth is actually further away from
do you think that that's an error, or is it because Strike just doesn't want her to go to the house?
That's a good question. let's go with that.
It could be either, but you know, he really doesn't want her to go to the house.
To be honest, if I really wanted to see someone and they were driving several hundred miles to come and see me, and I'd be like, oh no, pick me up from here, it's closer, and they said yes, mm-hmm. I'd probably be okay with that as well.
It's funny. See, I would have never known that.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to our first official episode, but don't worry, we're not done talking about part one, but we've talked about this much longer than we expected, so we thought it would be best to split it up into a couple of different episodes, and part two of our discussion of part one will be released later.
Hey, and don't forget to follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr at the SE Files Pod. And if you'd like to send us a response to anything you heard or have something you'd like to bring up, you can email us at sefilespodcast@gmail.com.